We're doing Gemara Makos, and I have good news and good news for you. The good news is that we're up to the hardest Mishnah in the Masechet. And the good news is that after you've done this, you'll have done the hardest Mishnah in the Masechet, and it only gets easier from here. It's very short. It's only a few lines. Bezrat Hashem, we will learn the Mishnah with Rashi's commentary and with Tosfos' commentary. This is one of those places where Tosfos is easier to understand than Rashi.
I find Rashi is harder than the text normally. Sometimes, depends.
So, again, our subject matter is Edim Zomimim. Witnesses who testified falsely and were caught specifically in the following way. After the court ruled based on their testimony but did not execute the ruling, and when they were caught to be liars, the second pair of witnesses specifically said, "You were with us at the time you claim you saw that occur. Be it the murder, be it the loan, be it the divorce, whatever it is you testified about, at the time that you claim you saw it, you were with us." And then the Torah says, with those specifications, if that is the case, then those false witnesses, the Edim Zomimim, they have to pay what they intended to inflict. And what we are going to discuss now, the subject of the next two Mishnayot, is what happens when they try to inflict upon a person a harm that's really time-oriented. Meaning, let's say I had a mortgage for 20 years, and they came and testified that I have to pay it back in 10 years. I had a loan that was due in a year, and they came and testified that it's due in a half a year. That's going to be the subject of the second Mishnah, which we will not get to tonight. The subject of our Mishnah is slightly more intricate. It is when they come and testify that Charles divorced his wife, and we all know that ultimately Charles is going to divorce his wife, so ultimately he would have paid her that money, possibly, or ultimately he might have died in that crash, possibly. So there's a question. Were they taking away from him something that he wouldn't have necessarily paid? Or maybe he would have died before he got a chance to divorce her. Or maybe he would have died first and he would have never paid off that money. Or maybe, I'm sorry, she would have died first and he would have never paid off that money. So then it's not so clear what they were trying to inflict on him. So then the Mishnah discusses, how do we evaluate what they should pay? And here we said, we enter another realm of halacha, which is fascinating that Chazal had it down to such a science, and that is the area of buying risk. Meaning, you have this market today also. In the days of Chazal, you could buy risk. Meaning, a couple's married, she wants some extra cash, she could come and sell her portion in the ksuba. She could say, go out to the marketplace and say, here's the deal. And Mike Subet says, my husband will pay me 1,000 shekel if we get divorced or he dies first. That's what I get. Who wants to buy the risk that he divorces me or dies first? And then you get 1,000 shekel. If I die first, you don't get anything, because then I'm not entitled to anything. So there's 2 to 3 odds you're going to get it. Who wants to buy it for 200 shekel, 300 shekel? Why is it worth so little? Because it's not only about the odds, it's also about the question, how do you collect? Meaning it's not only what you're entitled to, it's a question of collection. And being that you're always going to have to fight to collect, if it's a divorce, go fight the husband. If he dies, go fight the inheritors. So it's always going to be a fight to collect, so it's not worth as much. You lose money on the collection fees.
What does she gain from it?
Then? Now.
She has money.
She has money now. She knows she's just been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Well, she needs money when she's going to die. She figures she's going to die before he divorces her. She wants cash on hand.
You're implying that this case is specifically talking about when it's known that
No. I just mean to say that when we want to estimate what were they taking from each of them, so our approach to it is, well, there was a risk here. But that risk had a value. And that value is what they were, that's something tangible they were taking from him. Anything else that you want to claim they were taking from the husband or wife, well, that's not tangible. Go prove it. Maybe he would have divorced her. Maybe he's going to drop dead tomorrow. Maybe they only made him pay a day early. Go prove what they took from him. So the Mishnah's approach is, well, what they took from him is his capacity to sell that risk. His capacity, her capacity. So that's what we're going to see right now. Now, you understand that a husband might be very smart to buy his wife's risk. She says, I'm going to sell my 1,000 shekel for 200 shekel. He says, no problem, honey. I'm in.
He wins either way.
Well, she might say, no way, I'm selling to you. I want you to know it's going to cost you 1,000 shekel to divorce me. I'm not letting you get away with 200 shekel. Part of the idea of the money in the ksuba is to apply pressure to the husband not to divorce his wife. So she has an interest not to sell to him. It's not so clear that she would sell to him. But okay, we will ignore that for now.
Ooh. What if someone else?
Remember, we will ignore that for now. We will wait, and maybe after we've learned Rashi and Tosfos, we could again discuss this idea that she might not be willing to sell to him.
Yep.
Rashi is always assuming that if she's selling, he could buy. That's Rashi's approach to the sugya. Now let's begin.
Adrav, what if the husband gets in cahoots with his friend, and he tells his friend, you buy up the risk for 200 shekels, and I'll pay you 50 shekels to buy it from you?
Okay, good question. Gemara, Mishnah. Medinanu et ishploni shegeresh et ishto velo natan la ktubata. We testify about so-and-so, that he divorced his wife and did not pay her her ksuba. Now, she's out on vacation. She's by her parents. She's not around. She's not saying anything. He denies it vehemently. I never divorced her. I don't owe her a penny. Or, I divorced her and paid. I paid my ksuba. I don't owe her a penny. Okay, so he's not claiming that. He's claiming I never divorced her.
Why are you saying that she's not around?
Because if she's around, then what's she saying? He's not Modeh B'Miktas. He says I never divorced her.
He said I divorced her. Okay.
No, let's leave that case. He's saying I didn't divorce her.
You could testify that he did or did not divorce?
I don't want to go that route. I don't want to discuss it. That's why I'm putting her out of the picture for now. Maybe after we finish the sugya, we'll get back to that. For now, let's keep it simple. She's not in the picture. She's out on vacation. She's in a coma in the hospital. Okay? She's not in the picture. In walk the witnesses and say, hey, just before, why do you think she got into that accident to begin with? He just gave her a get. He divorced her. He owes her the money. They happen to be her brothers. Okay? So they're interested. Whatever. Okay, they're not her brothers.
How do they know that he didn't pay?
We were there when he divorced her. And he did not pay her ksuba, because if he'd have paid when he divorced her, he should have her a seat. He doesn't have her a seat that he paid. You see, he didn't pay. He owes her the ksuba.
They have to witness the divorce.
We witnessed the divorce.
They can claim that he didn't, that they could testify about him not paying also.
Again?
I mean, technically speaking, you could pay whenever, right?
Right, but he's also admitting that he didn't pay the ksuba. He's not claiming I paid. He's claiming I didn't divorce her and I didn't pay. I didn't divorce her. I don't owe her the money. So they say, on Rosh Chodesh Kislev, we were there. He divorced his wife and he didn't yet pay her ksuba. And he says, no, I didn't.
Oh, but after...
And then they were found to be Edim Zomimin. So now how do you estimate what they should pay? Our whole point is figuring out, what does it mean to pay Kasher Zomam, to pay what they plotted to do? What are you going to make them pay? The full amount. Maybe between now and tomorrow, he will choose to divorce her and pay the full amount. So then maybe he's going to drop dead and then it'll all get paid. Maybe he'll divorce her tomorrow or today. So... maybe they didn't make him lose anything. Only a matter of time. Maybe in 5 minutes he will divorce her. So, how do you evaluate what they should pay? Omdin, we evaluate. Kama adam rotzeli ten miktubato shel zo. How much would a person be willing to pay for her ksuba? That if she gets widowed or divorced, he'll make that money. If she dies, so then he loses his investment, the husband will inherit her. So the Mishnah seemed to say, the simple reading of the Mishnah was, as we explained, that you evaluate the price of her risk. Why do I evaluate her sale of risk? So Rashi's going to learn, because I could have bought her risk. Meaning, before they walked into court, I could sweet talk her. So Charles could walk over to, what was Charles' wife's name? Diana?
No.
Diana.
Oh, he would know. Yes. So Charles could walk over to Diana and say, Diana, you know we're in this forever. Why don't you have a little bit more pocket money? Sell me the ksuba. I'll give you 200 shekel, and we'll call it a deal. So the fact that he's planning on divorcing Diana tomorrow, he didn't have to tell her that. So when the witnesses walked in and testified, you're the money, it's over. So they took away his capacity to buy that risk. So I evaluate, what was the cost that she could have sold it for? Yeah? And then the question is, wait a second, so what were they trying to take from her? The 1,000 minus 200 or the 200? What are we talking about? So let's see the Gemara. Ketzad Shamim, the Gemara says, okay, how are you going to evaluate it? What did the Mishnah just tell us? Amar Rav Chisda Debal, Rav Natan Baroshi Amar Baisha, Amar Rav Papa Baisha Vechtubata. Okay, three shitas, which is really two. Let's see Rashi. Ketzad Shamin. How do we evaluate? What formula did the Mishnah just spell out? Klomar. Whenever you see a Klomar in Rashi, when you learn Be'ian, you have to look into what's Rashi telling you. Mai kamechayev lehu lemeitav. What is the Mishnah obligating the witnesses to give? Diyashlifto mishnatenu lishnei tzedadin. We could really explain our Mishnah in two directions. Ketzad, how so? Hare yesh le'ish ve'isha zechut safek b'ktuba zo. They both have a right of doubt, which what we might term the capacity to sell the risk that's in the ksuba. He mitzapa, what's her plus when she sells? She says, she'im yamuto yigoshena tigvet kula. If he drops dead or divorces her, she collects all. Ve'hu mitzape. And what's he selling? He says, "Shim tamut b'chayav." If she dies while he's still alive, yirashena, he will inherit her. Okay, so that's the risk they're selling. Yafe kos chuto mikos chuta. His risk is worth more than her risk. Why? Firstly, shehu ochel perot akarka amyuchad lektubata tamid. We have a rule that if she brings in nichse milug, she brings in assets into the marriage, her name is Diana Helmsley, so all the apartments she brought into the wedding, well, he keeps collecting the rent, the property belongs to her, but the profit that the property is producing, that goes to him.
This is only during the marriage?
This is only when she has someone buys out, right? Not if she just had property.
No, this is miluk. Nichse miluk. That's what nichse miluk is. Nichse miluk is property that he doesn't have to give back the value it was at when they got married. He gives it her back as is. And he benefits, he gets the produce. Meaning nichse tzon barzel is that you evaluate and you say, okay, I got to give you back at that value whenever it's over. That's why it's called tzon barzel. The sheep are metal sheep. They don't age, they don't die. The sheep are the way I got them in marriage. Nichse Milug says, no. The principle's yours. I can't do anything with the property. The property is yours, the principle's yours, and whether it goes up or down in value is not my business. But I enjoy the fruits of the property. I get the profits. The profits it produces right now.
In both cases he gets the profits.
I don't remember about Nisitzon Barzel, how that works. I don't remember. So,
this is when they're married, he actually collects the rent on her properties?
That's an oversimplification which we will adopt for now. So if they come to sell their rights, I'm sorry, I skipped a few lines. Rolling five lines before the wide lines. His strength is greater than hers, meaning his selling capacity is greater than hers. Because the lands that are designated to the ksuba, well, he enjoys the fruits consistently, so there's already a benefit. If you buy his rights in the ksuba, well, you're going to collect all the fruits so long as the marriage is intact. Velohi, and she has nothing to offer right now. And furthermore, he is standing, he's got the money right now. And she still has to get a collection agency to collect whatever it is. Even if you win on the bet, you still have to figure out how to collect it. Either in the case of a divorce, or in the case of death, you're dealing with someone. So if they want to sell their risk here, so he gets more money for his end of it than she does. The Mishnah seems to say you evaluate her risk. The Mishnah says, how much would a person pay on the bet if she becomes a widow? What does it mean if she becomes a widow? You're going to win on the bet if he drops dead. Well, that's talking about a case where you're buying her risk, not his risk. Now, it doesn't make sense. Let's say she could sell her risk for 200 shekel. Why should they pay those 200 shekel? That's not what they were trying to make anyone lose. That doesn't make sense. Meaning the simple reading of the Mishnah is that that's what you pay. Okay, so let's start drawing out. We all have papers and pens. Let's draw out what's going on here. Let's say the ksuba, we will oversimplify it. Let's say the ksuba has a value. You need a pencil? Let's say the ksuba has a value of 1,000. So that's our ksuba. Okay? Now we won't discuss the nichsei milug, the properties, and the profits of the properties. We'll leave that out of the discussion for a minute.
Okay, can I ask a question about that?
No.
It's a simple one.
Not yet. Let's focus, let's get the picture, and then ask questions. Okay.
So that's something you said previously, not about...
Yeah, not now. We'll get there, it'll just confuse everyone. Okay, if she sells, she can get 200 shekel for her risk, because, you know, you might get 1,000 shekel if he drops dead or divorces her, but you're always going to have to hire a collection agency, go to court, get it out of the inheritors, get it out of the husband. So let's say the most you'd pay is 200 shekel for her risk. His risk, well, you know you're getting the fruits right now, and you know that if she drops dead, you're going to get those 1,000 shekels right away. You just get it from the husband. He owes you that money. There's no need for a collection agency or anything, theoretically, hopefully. So let's say he could sell his risk for 350. Okay? Her ksuba's 1,000. His risk is worth 350. Her risk is worth 200. Now, the Mishnah says you evaluate how much her risk is worth. If she would have gotten widowed or divorced, well, we know it's worth 200 shekel. But that's not what they were trying to take away from him. They came and testified, you owe her 1,000 shekel. You divorced her and didn't pay her your ksuba money. So why should I make them pay 200 shekel? So the simple reading of the Mishnah does not make sense. So you could say, well, they took away from him his 350, because he could have sold it for 350. Before they testified he divorced her, he could have sold his risk. Now he cannot. So one understanding is, I guess, evaluate his risk. That's what he could have sold. That's what he can't sell once they testify he divorced. It's like, you bit me? I wouldn't want you against me. Okay? Fine. So, but that doesn't fit the words of the Mishnah well. So That's why the Gemara is asking, how do I evaluate? What did the Mishnah just tell me? Rashi's explaining the Gemara.
You should have to maybe add the two together or something.
Let's hear Rashi. After we understand, it makes sense to ask questions. Let's first get it. So again, we're on the first wide line. Velishna dematnitin mashma. The wording of the Mishnah seems to say sheshamin zchut sveika, that we evaluate her wrist. Diktani, because what does the Mishnah say? Kama adam rotze liten. How much does a person want to pay shim nital mela if she gets widowed? V'haleka lemeimar. And it doesn't mean, you can't say shotan damim yitnu al zomemin. It doesn't make sense that they should pay the 200 that she would have gotten for her wrist. Sharei lo zchut sveika ba'o lehafsido. Because that's not what they were trying to make him lose. He wasn't going to lose that money. Ela zchut sveiko. They were trying to make him lose his value of the risk. Sheyum chayvin oto lifua miyad. They would have made him pay the 1,000 right away. V'yesh lomar dehachi kamar. So we could say that this is what the Mishnah was saying. Shamin zchut sveika. The Mishnah does seem to say you evaluate her risk. Kama adam rotze liten. How much would a person pay for her benefits? So they won't pay the 200, and they'll pay the remnant, the remaining 800. Why? Because they would have made him lose all 800 with their testimony. Because he could have sweet-talked her, he could have come to her and said, oh Diana, we're in this for life. What do you need that silly ksuba for? Well, you give me the ksuba, I'll give you 200 shekel, go on a shopping spree. He gets the ksuba in his hand, and that's it. He's never going to have to pay the 1,000. Ba-ba-da-ba-bam, in walk Charles and Jack, okay, Jack and Jim, are Eidim Zomimim. The minute they testify, you divorced her, you divorced Diana, you just didn't pay her, that's it. He can no longer buy it. So what did they make him lose? They made him lose 800. It would have cost him 200 to get out of it, right? He could have bought it off her for 200. And now that they walked into court, he can't. He's going to have to pay the full 1,000. So how much am I going to make them pay? 800.
But he loses 1,000 now.
Now he loses, but he would have lost 200 anyways. It would have cost him 200 to get the ksuba out of her, right?
But he didn't. So they're making him lose 1,000.
Right, but they're not making him lose 1,000. Because the best he could have done was pay 200. So they made him lose the difference. They made him lose the 800. Had he bought from Diana her rights, it would have cost him 200.
But he didn't.
But I'm saying, they made it that he couldn't do it. But had he done it, it would have cost him 200.
Right.
So they didn't make him lose 200 of the 1,000. They made him lose the other 800.
Why 800?
Because of their testimony, he could no longer spend 200. Now he has to spend 1,000. So they made him pay another 800. He would have paid 200. Now he pays 1,000.
But if he had bought it, he would have paid 200.
Right?
Not 1,000.
Right, but 200. Now he's going to pay 1,000. The difference between 1,000 and 200 is 800.
Why difference? Where's the difference coming in? Look, there's no connection between the two. If he had bought it, he would have paid 200. But if he doesn't, he pays 1,000. You can't just say now
difference. The difference is 800.
The difference is 800, but what's the connection? He would never have, in any circumstance, had to pay 800.
Right.
So where's the 800 coming from? You can't just say, okay, this minus that is 800.
Well, I say that...
If he had bought it for 200, he would have saved himself 800 if they got divorced.
Right.
He would have saved himself 800, but he wouldn't have ever had to pay 800, so how are they trying to make him lose 800?
You're right, they're trying to make him lose 1,000.
Right.
But... being that they could claim, well, you might have divorced her tomorrow anyway, so we didn't make you lose the full 1,000. So we say back to them, you're right. You didn't make him lose the full 1,000. Because he might have divorced her tomorrow. But he could have bought her rights for 200. So you didn't make him lose the other 800. Even if he would have divorced her tomorrow. But he could have proceeded to first seduce her to sell it for 200.
But there's never a situation where he would have had to pay 800.
That's true.
So I don't get it. I mean, 800, as I say, was would be what he would have saved
right.
if he had bought his rights and then divorced her.
So they took away from him the
not
capacity
paid,
to
paid.
Save
exactly.
800.
Oh, okay.
And you're right. It okay. turns out that we have here a funny situation. I have to pay, make them pay kasher zomam when their kasher zomam was to preclude him from saving 800. And even so, I'm making them pay 800. You're right. Your okay. point is well taken. You're right. It's not really symmetrical. You're right. He's saying kasher zomam asked you, what did you make want to make him do? Well, that's not what they want to make him do. They would have never made him pay 800. But okay, this is how we calculate it. So, back to our Rashi.
Really, it's a discount for the Eidim. That's what it is, a discount. They tried to make him pay 1,000.
That's what the Mishnah said. They're going to make a claim. You would have paid anyways. Tomorrow you would have divorced her. The next day, come on, Charles, we know what's up
right.
your sleep.
So, you would have divorced for 200, so now they have to pay the...
Yeah, but he's right that this is
yeah,
this really
exactly
breaks the mold of kasher zomam.
Also, especially because if they're zomam and they're trying to prevent him from buying it for 200, then if he had bought it for 200, then there wouldn't be an issue. And if he hasn't, then he would never have saved the 800, so it's not even an issue either. If you'd bought the rights for 200, then if they told him that he divorced, he'd be already immune.
But he still has the capacity to buy it tomorrow. Now that they testified, he no longer has that capacity. So they prevented him from saving the 800. Yesterday he didn't buy it, but tomorrow he would have. אבל אותן דמים לא היו מפסידים אותו שרי גם אתה כשהוזמו אם היה רוצה למוכרה ייתן לבעל ברצון טובת הנעזור. So those 200, that's not what they made him lose, because even now they became Edom Zomimim. If she'd want to sell him, if she'd be willing to sell her ksuba, he'd be more than happy to buy it from her, and it would have still cost him that. Meaning, where are we holding now? They became Edom Zomimim. So, okay, he didn't divorce her. He'd still have to pay 200 to get out of the ksuba. Odilma, so that's one way of analyzing it. Another way of analyzing it is maybe, we have to evaluate his risk, remember? He could have sold it for 350. And they should pay that 350, because that's what they made him lose. Before they walked into court, he could have sold it for 350. Now they're saying he divorced her, he can no longer sell it. And you don't make them pay the whole ksuba minus her risk. Because maybe that's not really what they would have made him lose. Why? Because you know what? Now we're back to square one. They became Edom Zomimim. Maybe he's going to die tomorrow. And then she's going to get all that money. Because maybe she's going to say, hey buddy, no way I'm selling you my ksuba for 200 shekel. But you know what? There's only one thing he could be confident he could have bought, and that is, there's one thing he could have done that was in his control, to sell his. Hers, she has to be stupid to sell him. Even if she would sell it on the market, not to him. So, maybe, they shouldn't have to pay the full 800, because who says she would have ever sold him? So you're saying on the market it was worth 200, but that doesn't mean she would have sold it to him for 200. So what were they taking from him? The 350. Aval tovat hanato yitnu lo, they should pay him what he could have benefited from it. Shekach hayu mafsidin oto, shim lo uzmo haya pore miyad achsha, miyad. Because if they wouldn't have walked in, if they wouldn't have become Edom Zomimim, he would have had to pay the 1,000 now. עכשיו שהוזמו יש לו בז חוץ סביקו כבתחילה. Now that they became Edom Zomim, so he could sell his risk just like he could before. V'shim nita amaladim at nitin. So then what does it mean when the Mishnah says we evaluate how much a person would pay for the ksuba if she became a widow? That doesn't sound like you're evaluating his risk. That sounds like you're evaluating her risk. Hachi kama, this is what the Mishnah meant to say. Omdin kama adam otzen li ten b'ktuba zo shitluya b'safek. The Mishnah means to say, you evaluate how much would a person pay for this ksuba which is standing in doubt. Shim nitam elatik benahi. And then the Mishnah isn't telling you which side of the doubt you're buying, it's just telling you the doubt is, will she become a widow? And there's a flip side to that, if he dies, which the Mishnah doesn't bother mentioning. Meaning the Mishnah isn't describing which side of the risk, the Mishnah is just describing the aspects of the risk. The aspects are one of them dying or divorce. But what the Mishnah means is you evaluate his risk, what he could have sold it for, and that's what they pay. So Rav Chista says, yes, they pay his risk. Rav Nosson Bar Yoshia says they pay the ksuba minus her risk. And Rav Papa comes to add, but they don't have to pay the nichsei milug. Meaning, even though technically they would make him lose all the profits from the properties, meaning so long as they were married, he was making tons of money every month off of her properties, they could say, we had no idea there were properties. We just testified about the ksuba money. We didn't testify about the properties. By default, that would have happened, but that's not our fault. That's not what we were plotting to do. That's not what we testified about. That was a retroactive act that would have happened. You're right. It was an automatic outcome, but it wasn't what we plotted. So that's why Rav Papa stresses Bishavik Tubata. So again, Ketzat Shamim, the Gemara asks, how do you evaluate? Amar Rav Chista Bebar. Rav Chista says, make them pay the husband's risk because that's what they took from him. He couldn't sell his risk. Rav Natan Maroshi Amar Beisha. He says, you evaluate the ksuba minus the wife's risk because that's what they were making him lose. Amar Papa Bishavik Tubata. Rav Papa says, yeah. But they do not have to pay all the profits from the Nichsei Milug. Only the ksuba money itself minus the woman's risk. But the nichsei milug, they could say, we didn't testify directly about that, and that wasn't what we were plotting to take from him. So that's Rashi's pshat in the sugya, and for now I think that was clear enough that we won't go on to Tosfos, we'll just leave it at that, and move forward from here next week.